Right. Hello.
Now that's jazz.
That is real jazz. Hi, everybody. Welcome to American Hit Radio here on WHPC 90.3 FM. We're here every Tuesday and Friday at 5 p.m. And today we are taking our third and final look at Dr. Jazz himself, Jelly Roll Morton. I hope you feel like dancing, and I hope you feel like learning something when you dance, because that's what today's show is going to be about. On Fridays, we like to discuss how music changed. We look at some of the most important musicians of our era, which is to say of the past 100 years. It's pretty deep. And we've been looking lately at Jelly Roll Morton. Now, we're spending so much time on Jelly Roll. He's getting 3 shows, just a lot of shows. But first of all, his music does warrant it. It really does. But the real reason we're spending this much time on Jelly Roll is because there's such a fabulous amount of...
a wealth of information.
Exactly. With Jelly Roll himself telling the stories of what life was like at the birth of jazz, what was happening in New Orleans where jazz was born. And it's... what better person could there possibly be to talk to than the very person who actually claims to have invented it?
He's got a very colorful storyteller, and it's great that you can hear his story in his own voice.
Absolutely. It makes for such intriguing listening, for me especially, and of course we'll intersperse all of his stories with as much music as possible. In a city as colorful as New Orleans, Jelly Roll Morton was the king of all colorful characters. So let's just put it in perspective in that sense. We're talking about a guy who was probably just out of control. In his day, totally out of control. We opened up with a track by Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers that is called Dr. Jazz. And let's continue now, but I want to continue with actually Jelly Roll Morton telling the story now of the development of pretty much from ragtime to jazz. And he does it in the story of one track, a track called Tiger Rag. Rag as if it was ragtime. Mm-hmm. But it's really a jazz track. And it's interesting because, as I said, he used to play piano in the...
Red
Light District, the Tenderloin District, whatever, in these whorehouses and people. And he was the entertainer. And he more or less discusses how this came to be at night in one of those places of business. Here, I'll let Chili Roll tell you the story of Tiger Rag.
Jazz started in New Orleans. And this Tiger Rag happened to be transformed from an old quadrille that was in many different tempos. And I'll no doubt give you an idea how it went. This was the introduction, meaning that everyone was supposed to get their partners. Get your partners. Everybody get your partners. And people would be rushing around the hall getting their partners. It'd maybe have maybe 5 minutes lapse between that time. And, of course, they'd start it over again, and that was the first part of it. And the next train would be a waltz train, I believe. Train. Also, it'll have another strain that comes right below, right beside it. It's a mazooka time. Third strain, and of course they had another strain, and that was in a different tempo. That's a 2-4 time. Another one. Show you how it was transformed. It happened to be transformed by your performer at this particular time. Tiger Rag for your approval.
Who named it Tiger Rag?
I also named it. Came from the way that I played it by making the tiger on my elbow. And I also named it. A person said once, "That sounds like a tiger howling." I said, "Fine." To myself, I said, "That's the name." So I'll play it for you. Thank you.
tiger.
Tiger Rag. Of course, we named it Tiger Rag, but we had a lot of other numbers around that it was supposed to be good.
There we have it.
All right. There you go. You know, it's really great to hear Jelly Roll telling his story and hearing his music, because even though you know his name, you never really hear his music much. And I, you know, being born and raised in New Orleans, you hear, you know, other jazz artists maybe who are a little bit more recent, like Louis Armstrong, for instance. But Jelly Roll is really, I guess you might call him the father of jazz, and he doesn't get as much credit as you'd think he might.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, he and Louis Armstrong were actually contemporaries. And I guess Jelly Roll predates him in the sense that, first of all, Jelly Roll Morton was a writer, which Louis Armstrong never really was a writer of songs. He was an interpreter of songs. He did certainly write plenty of compositions with the Hot Five, so I should be careful what I say, because he did a lot of original stuff. In the earlier days.
You better watch it.
I should watch that. But by the same token, I mean, Jelly Roll was writing it and putting it down on paper and, in some instances, getting it published. Not always.
Right.
Not always. There's a lot of songs that he claims that he wrote that were published by others. But he also explains why in some of these interviews, as we had heard in previous shows. If you're just tuning in for the first time, you should let the listeners be aware that this is our third show on Jelly Roll. And we've been covering him in this format for quite a while, with letting him do the talking most of the time. It's a wonderful, for me, it's a very magical thing, because this doesn't happen very often where you can let the artist tell their own story. It's a very rare thing, especially when you're talking about this time in history. It's incredible. And the other thing is, like, we're hearing an interview that took place after Jelly Roll was pretty much forgotten, written off, so to speak, in the late 30s, when he had sat down with John Lomax and told a story to John about the early days. At that point, he was playing in a tiny little club in Washington, D.C., and really not making much money, and was essentially forgotten, and people had viewed him as a has-been, you know, grandpa music. But things come full circle.
Well, to be a has-been, you had to have been something.
And Jelly Roll certainly was and is again now, because I think we finally are recognizing him, and it's a great honor for me to do this show, because you can really hear just how great Jelly Roll really truly
right.
was.
Which brings us to discuss the song that we just heard, actually, that whole tiger movement that he says in the interview about doing
the
tiger. He had the tiger on his elbow.
I didn't understand what that meant until you
hear it played. And then you're like, oh, that's what he means. And he ran his elbow across the keyboard. And I find it fascinating to think that he could have been like the originator of that sort of technique.
Crazy man guitar.
Like what Jerry Lee Lewis came to do much later, you know, with his Great Balls of Fire routine. I mean, I guess the only thing Jelly Roll was missing was the lighter fluid on the keyboard or something.
Exactly. He didn't set it on fire, but he's using body language when he
plays.
Not
literally on fire, but he would set it on fire for his time. He was definitely...
Good point. Very good point. Yeah, I mean, and even you can hear it then in this interview, which took place in 1939. I mean, that's some really good extemporaneous piano stuff that he's
coming
up with.
He really knew his stuff.
Really,
I mean, to hear him go through the the way the music changed to develop what he came out with the Tiger Rag.
That's why I thought that interview portion right there was particularly relevant as far as history.
Great.
You can hear it developed.
Yeah, you can. He even tells you how it all developed. He demonstrates it.
Well,
smart
like I
guy.
Said, he would put a lot of the stuff down on paper, a lot of his arrangements for bands, and some of the stuff is just stunningly great. And I'd like to play now one of what I consider to be perhaps one of his masterworks. This is an arrangement for a band, a New Orleans style band, and this is just a beautiful piece of work. It's Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers. Here's Black Bottom Stomp. One of the best masterworks of jazz, of early jazz, without a doubt. Black Bottom Stomp by Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers.
Try and say that two times fast.
I couldn't even say it one time slow. I want to remind you, you're listening to How Music Changed. It's our Friday extension of the American Hit Radio Show here on WHBC 90.3 FM. We do this sort of thing every Friday. We're not always all the way back in the early 1900s. Sometimes we cut forward to much more contemporary stuff. That's pretty much every other week we like to jostle it around a little bit for everybody. We've been on a roll, so to speak, though, for the past 3 weeks.
A jelly roll. Ouch.
And I couldn't resist that, though. Letting him, yeah, bidding. But this is great. I mean, if you might notice in the rhythm of the Black Bottom Stomp there, you had that whole Tiger Rag type of stop-start thing going on, going into the piano break, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, same rhythms.
It's funny because, you know, nowadays people talk about how pop singers can be very formulaic.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
In a way that he was employing a formula
to another song.
Right.
It has the ideas and says, I'm going to write that into this one. Well, the thing is, there's a lot of different elements to what he was about, of course. I mean, the whole point of it being jazz was that we were incorporating ragtime and the blues and New Orleans culture together. And I'm going to let Jelly Roll continue along those lines by more or less bringing all... I said that he was the guy that was going to bring all of these disparate elements that we've been discussing for weeks together. Mm-hmm. And this is the show where you really will hear that happen. We heard the ragtime bit already, and now we're going to hear a little bit of Jelly Roll talking about the blues. Keep in mind now how early this is. This is fairly racy. We don't have nothing to worry about as far as bleeping it yet, but... That might be later, but it's still incredible. Some of the topics that he comes up with for considering the time. This was recorded in the 30s, and it's a song that he's remembering from the teens. Here's Jelly Roll Morton talking about the blues.
Well, the girls would start, and say, play me something there, boy. Play me some blues. So they'd start playing in this way. Sit right here, think a thousand miles away. Sit right here, think a thousand miles away. Since I had the blues this bad, cannot remember the day. Tell me, baby, what you got on your mind? Tell me, baby, what you got on your mind? I'm eating and drinking, having a lovely time. Let me be your wiggler till your wobbler comes. Let me be your wiggler till your wobbler comes. You tell your wobbler what your wiggler done. I never believe in having one woman at a time. I never believe in having one woman at a time. I always have six, seven, eight, or nine. Said, babe, oh, baby, babe, oh, baby, you bound to set your sweet papa crazy. Sometimes we'd have good-looking women of all kinds. Beautiful women. Some was ugly, very ugly. Some looked like they had limp lips, looked like bumpers on a boxcar. I'm telling you, they had all kind of men dressed up, rags. Rags looked like ribbons on some of them. Some of them with big guns in their bosoms. It was the law in New Orleans that anybody could carry a gun if they wanted, almost. Of course, it was just about a $10 fine, so it didn't make very much difference. And if they found you $10, Why, your sentence would be 30 days in jail, and possibly to put you in the market to clean up the markets in the morning. And most of the prisoners would always run away.
Is this not the most fascinating thing to hear him talk in his own words?
Like yes.
This? Just, and you hear about if you get busted for carrying a gun in New Orleans, it would be a $10 fine, so nobody really cared much anyway. Even $10 was a lot of money, I'm sure, in 1910,
yeah.
But still in all, it's not, and you know, what they sent you to clean up the market. And you know what he means, just talking about the French market right there on Decatur Street.
Yep.
Which was there then. Absolutely incredible. Let me be your wiggler till your wobbler comes. That's a good one. That's a blues that somebody should do. See, you're right, Jelly Roll Morton, his stuff is just not, it's not as recognized as it should be because so much of it, I guess, was recorded in such a simple, careless way. Like,
right.
Like this field recording by John Lomax.
It's just very haphazard.
It's not it's not really recorded for release by the public, but you can hear how great it is. Let me play a track that was recorded for public consumption. It's another one of his absolute classics. It'll get us back on topic too soon afterward, especially considering the title of this track by Jelly Roll. Here's Dead Man Blues.
What's that I hear at 12 o'clock in the daytime? Church bell ringing.
Man, you don't hear no church bell ringing at 12 o'clock in the day.
Yes, indeed. Somebody must be dead.
Ain't nobody dead. Somebody must be dead drunk.
No, I think it's a funeral.
Yeah, looky here. I believe there is a funeral. I believe I hear that trombone phone.
There it is. The little false ending got us.
Yeah. False rock and roll ending.
I'll tell you. I mean, I'm saving some of the best for this show because this is some of my favorite Jelly Roll Morton stuff ever. That was Dead Man Blues. And I mentioned it brings us back on topic because, as you know, especially you, Heidi, of course, you know this, New Orleans culture is built very much so around clubs and different organizations and the whole idea.
The social and pleasure clubs.
And marches that take place, and a lot of the marches and the parades that take place are based around funerals. And since we just played Dead Man Blues, Let's let Jelly Roll talk to us about funeral marches and how they were around the turn of the century in New Orleans.
Of course, everybody in the city of New Orleans was always organization-minded, which I guess the world knows. And a dead man always belonged to several organizations, such as clubs and, we'll say, secret orders, and so forth and so on. And every time one died, why, 9 out of 10, there was always a big band turnout when the day that he was supposed to be buried. Never buried at night, always in the day. And, of course, a lot of times right in the heart of the city, the burial would take place. Well, at when the band would start, why, we know that the man was fixing to be buried. So you could hear the band come up the street. Before they would get to the place where the gentleman was to be taken in for his last rite. And they would play different dead marches. And on leaving, this would be the march that would usually start the plane. Flee as the bird to the mountain. Would enter the graveyard. Some of them call them cemeteries and so forth and so on. Very seldom they would bury them in the deep. They would never bury them in the mud. They'd always bury them in a vault. And they'd leave the graveyard, as they call it, while the band would get ready to strike up. They'd have a second line behind them, well, maybe a couple of blocks long, with broomsticks, baseball bats, and all forms of ammunition, we'd call it, to combat some of their foe when they come to the dividing line. And of course they'd start. The band would get started, they'd hear the drums.
It's a shame that gets cut out so quickly like that, but there you have it. A little bit of the history of the.
It's funny that nowadays he's talking about how people carry bats and other instruments, weapons to like protect themselves when they cross other people's boundaries. And even to this day in New Orleans, they'll have PSAs. I mean, now since the advent of the gun, you know, people get excited and they'll shoot guns in the air in New Orleans. It's a huge problem of falling bullets. And they always, every year, like for New Year's, they'll start putting on the PSAs, you know, like, you know, what goes up must come down sort of thing.
Do you know that that's why Louis Armstrong ended up in a home for boys? as a young as a child?
Because he was reveling and shooting his gun up in the air.
He shot a gun up in the air and somebody saw him do
it.
It's
just what you do.
It's why he learned to play the trumpet, because when Louis Armstrong was put away in a home for boys, wayward boys, he learned to pick up the trumpet and he was in the home.
That's right.
It's funny. That's in New Orleans. How about that? Now, let me take this opportunity just to remind everybody that you are listening to How Music Changed on WHPC 90.3 FM. We're a part of American Hit Radio, and we're here every Tuesday and Friday at 5 p.m. If you want to catch our show on the internet, if you like the show and you want to hear it again, or how about this? If you missed either of our previous shows on Jelly Roll Morton, or how about we did a whole series of shows on the birth of the blues, we did a show on the birth of jazz, we did a couple more contemporary shows, too. We did a little bit.
Check it all out.
On a couple of the songwriters of recent years and everything else. So if you go to our website, you can catch as many shows as you want and listen to them at your leisure. Our main website where we have the most recent shows is AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com. You can also check out as many as, over 100 of them at ShutUpAndListen.com. That's ShutUpAndListen.com. Shut up and listen, like a good Brooklyn boy. And you can catch our shows there. Meanwhile, we're discussing the music of Jelly Roll Morton and letting him tell the story in his own words 90% of the time. Let me play another one of my favorite Jelly Roll Morton tracks that I saved for the last day. This is, I think, they're all masterworks, but this is one of his most gorgeous masterworks for the piano. This is called The Pearls. That's The Pearls, as played and written by Jelly Roll Morton. Now, one of the things I want to point out about Jelly Roll, like you were saying, that he really doesn't get enough airplay, and I guess we both presume that it's because of the quality of these recordings are not really up to commercial level, even by old standards. Like
they
the stuff,
need some Dolby.
Even the original Louis Armstrong recordings from like the 1925-26, they are more listenable. They're easier to hear what's going on than a lot of this stuff. But a lot of it was written down, and it can be transposed to modern styles, or at least, you know, modern recording techniques, if you wish. And somebody did that, and I want to play a version of that same exact song, The Pearls, with the arrangement transposed from piano to guitar.
Oh.
And it's quite beautiful. It was done by Ry Cooder in the late 70s on an album called Jazz. So this would be interesting, I think, just in honor of Jelly Roll Morton. Here is Ry Cooder playing a guitar version of the very track we just heard, The Pearls. It's a beautiful transition from piano to guitar, as done by Ry Cooder.
Amazing.
The Pearls and Tijuana, tracks by Jelly Roll Morton, as performed there by Ry Cooder. Most people, I guess, are familiar. We got a call from Frank, a regular listener, and he was able to point out that he was affiliated with that movie Crossroads about selling your soul to the, you know, that whole,
yes,
Robert Johnson thing,
yes,
with Macchio, the Karate Kid, the guitar and all that stuff. Most people I suppose think of Ry Cooder as a soundtrack guy, and he's an amazing
player.
Well,
and they think of him being
player.
Associated with the Buena Vista Social Club.
That
probably,
as well. I was originally thinking that, you know, Ry doesn't really get a place in the How Music Changed thing because he's more of an interpreter than somebody who's truly influential in terms of his own style. But somebody who comes back and revives a lot of this stuff, I don't know, maybe he earns it in his own way. Maybe not as a writer.
I think you should reconsider that, perhaps.
Certainly as an interpreter, he deserves it. Well, meanwhile, we've got a little bit more. I want to let Jelly Roll Morton tell a little bit more of his story. We've only got 10 minutes left, but he talks a little bit more about the city of New Orleans, and I think this is really important because we've spent, boy, a good 8 weeks on developing the early parts of American music and how it all began to come together. And as we're pointing out here, it was in New Orleans where all of these various elements gelled: the blues, ragtime, pop music. And they were, and of course, with the cross-cultural mix that was happening in New Orleans, unlike anywhere else on the planet Earth, then and now, but especially then.
It's a real melting pot there.
Absolutely. And it was a very musical city, a city with a lot of song. So it was really the only place where this could have happened. And I'll let Jelly Roll Morton set up the scene right now as we come toward the end of our series on Mr. Jelly Roll Morton.
I'm telling you, they put them in the market sometimes, and of course they'd run away, as I before stated. So the 30 days didn't mean anything. Of course it was a free and easy place. Everybody got along just the same, and that's the way it was. There wasn't no certain neighborhood for nobody to live in, only with the St. Charles Avenue district, which was considered the millionaire district. In fact, it was. And that's how it was, why everybody just went any place that they wanted. Many times you would see some of those St. Charles Avenue bunch right in one of those honky-tonks. They was around, they called themselves slumming, I guess, but they were there just the same, nudging elbows with all the big bums. And I'll go so far to say that some of them were even lousy. You would meet many times with some of those fellas that was on the levee, such as the inferior longshowmen, longshowmen, is that right? And screwmans. And many of them, I would doubt, very unclean. Some of them was even lousy, I believe. I've known many cases where they'd take a louse and throw on another guy that was dressed up to get him in the same fix that they were in. Oh, it was a funny situation.
Do you remember any of the stuff that they sang, Charlie?
On the levee?
Yeah.
Well, you sing those. I'm a levee man. I'm a levee man. I'm a levee man. Yes, I'm a levee man. I said, Captain, Captain, let me make this trip. I said, Captain, Captain, let me make this trip. If you do, Captain, I will get my grip. If you do, my captain, let me go home and get my grip. 'Cause I need the money, or the money be, and I need it. I need the money, and I need it bad, because I want a lot of money, cause I never had. I want a lot of money, cause I never had.
What about old Stack of Lee?
Stack of Lee was one of the voices that went in there. What do you call this numbers? Rita wrote in St. Louis. Stack of Lee and Billy Lyon about the milk white Stetson hat.
There you have a little bit more. They cut off some of these segments in odd places, but that's it for Jelly Roll Morton telling his side of the story. I sit on the edge of my seat for two reasons. The first one is because it's just so fascinating to hear what he's got to say. And the second one, because I'm afraid he's going to say something that he shouldn't say on the radio.
Mm-mm.
It's kind of crazy, but if you check out a lot of these early recordings of Jelly Roll that he did with John Lomax, he gets very much in the swing or in the mood of what it was like when he was in the New Orleans days and he was playing in the Tenderloin District and such. And what he starts doing is he starts lapsing into it and he starts singing blues songs or talking in that regard in ways that you can't, like, you know, people think that some of these swear words were invented in the past, you know, half
50 years,
maybe,
or so.
Right? And believe me, I mean, you'd be amazed at the language and the styling and that went on back around the turn of the century in the late 1800s into early 1900s. Jelly Roll sings these songs, boy, and in fact, this very next track that we have to play is we literally have to bleep it. It as incredible as that sounds, it's 100 years old, and I have to bleep it. it blows my mind, but. I loved every single thing about this. It was just great to have so much help from Jelly Roll himself to tell the story. I hope you enjoyed this series.
I did.
On Jelly Roll Morton. We will be back next Friday. We're going to take another look at a contemporary act. I believe we'll be looking at the Isley Brothers as we come back up toward the present. So we'll spend a week with the Isley Brothers
next week. That's quite a leap.
And meanwhile, if you wish, you could catch us on Tuesday again when we do our normal American Hit Radio shows. But meanwhile, we'll let Jelly Roll take it out with one of his own compositions. Again, one of his nicknames was Winin' Boy or Windin' Boy. It's hard to say. Nobody ever asked him to actually spell it, so you can determine for yourself what it is. But you got to remember, this is the late, great Jelly Roll Morton, the original, one and only Windin' Boy. Don't deny his name. Thanks, folks. See you next week. Take care.
I want a mama, baby, that's me.
kind. I want a mama sweet and kind, so she can shake that big behind. I'm the whining boy, don't deny my name. Coming back to me.